You are listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 13. Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell. Today on the show, we have Malcolm Campbell. Malcolm is trained as a trained weaver and textile designer and has worked in various different leading designer, sales, marketing and managing positions within the wool industry. There would be so many questions about Malcolm's career and his own business. However, there is one topic very dear to his heart, which we will talk about today, and that is education in textiles. Malcolm is an author of two published children's books called Malcolm the Weaver, that have the goal to educate 4 to 8 year old children in the art of color and the craft of textiles. Malcolm, it's great to have you on the show today. How are you?
I'm fine, Elizabeth. Thank you very much.
Great. So I think we'll just dive right into the topic. Maybe to start, tell us briefly about yourself and how did it come about that you wrote two children's books? And I think you're also the inspiration of the main character. So tell us more.
That's right. My career started, Elizabeth, in 1970, where I did an apprenticeship in textile design and colour at the Scottish College of Textiles. My mother at the time was a mender, a burler of cloth, and I was fascinated by her work and the work she did with fabric and textiles. And I was given an apprenticeship by a company in Haddington in Scotland for a 5-year apprenticeship, which gave me the City and Guilds of London Institute awards in textile design and colour. For 46 years, I've worked in the industry. I've had some fantastic jobs working for the Woolmark Company as marketing director. I've seen the flocks of Australian sheep rise to 180 million sheep and fall again to the current 45-50 million sheep. I've worked for the largest textile company in Yorkshire, Parkland Textiles. And I've worked for one of the top cloth merchants, Holland & Sherry, up in Peebles in Scotland. All through my career, I've been interested in talking to students and helping young people to develop their careers. I lecture at Grace School of Art in Aberdeen, Derby University, Huddersfield Universities. And recently, I've realised that the education standard has started to slip a little bit and that there's not as many designers coming through, that students have been taught in other aspects of industry and not the design and the colour side of things. The opportunity to write the books arose 3 years ago. I was invited by BBC Scotland to do a feature on Harris Tweed and to talk to children. Now, I have 10-year-old twins who at the time were 7 years old. And my twins, Aidan and Zoe and I, travelled up to the Isle of Lewis and we filmed for 3 days with a crew of 7 from BBC Scotland for a CBeebies programme called Weaver. Now, my children, who were filming that programme, were fascinated by the wool from sheep, dyeing it to colours, spinning it to yarn, weaving it to cloth. And I started initially to tell them the stories of textiles. And then I realised with their interest and with their interest from their friends that there was an opportunity to educate on a wider basis. My daughter Sharon is an artist. She's a graphic artist. She lives in New Zealand, in Auckland in New Zealand. And Sharon and I decided to write books, which I wrote, and she would then illustrate them. And the books were used to educate children on the craft of textiles, the art of colour, but also to get children to think about what they wanted to do with their careers. Now, most children learn about colour and the hue, the value, the chroma of colour at university or at college when they're 16, 17. I wanted to try and catch children at reception at pre-primary school, so that before they started to think about their jobs, they had an appreciation of the art and the beauty of cloth, of textiles, whether it be for apparel or interiors, or just colour in general, and how colour can influence their lives. So that was the start of the book. And we wrote our first book in 2014, which was Malcolm the Weaver, Weaver of a Life in Colour. And then I wanted also to educate children about the environment. So the second book we did is a flip book. On one side, it's the rainbow that makes colours, and it educates children what would happen if the rivers and the seas became polluted and colour changed in the world. And on the flip book, it's the moon that shone dark. It's what would happen if air pollution blocked out the sun and people lived in darkness, and there was no longer the beauty of colour. So that was the background to how the books came around. It was from the, and if your listeners go onto YouTube and plug in Malcolm the Weaver, you can see the 15-minute film that was made by the BBC, and it's a very good film because not only does it explain me talking to children about colour, it also gives you the archives. It shows how weaving used to be, how spinning used to be, how colour used to be made from vegetables and roots and plants, etc. And the reason I became the main character is that my other business, The Cloth of Kings, which is Harris Tweed orientated and based on two tartans in Harris Tweed, started in 2010. I was invited to a reception at Buckingham Palace by Her Majesty the Queen, a reception for the British fashion industry. I've designed cloths for the likes of Oswald Botang, Paul Costello, and these type of designers. And I was introduced to Her Majesty the Queen. Now, I'm 6'7" tall. Her Majesty the Queen is much smaller than I. She's 5'4" approximately. And I was introduced as Mr. Campbell from Holland & Sherry, the company that I worked for at the time. I said, "Good evening, ma'am. My name is Malcolm. I'm a Scottish weaver." And she turned to the Duke of Edinburgh and said, "This is Malcolm the Weaver." So I was in fact christened by Her Majesty the Queen as Malcolm the Weaver, and thought that was quite an appropriate name to use, both from a Cloth of Kings business and for the Malcolm the Weaver stories. So that's how that came about. It was educating my children, broadening it out to other children, and then using the title that Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth had given me.
Wow, that's a wonderful story. And indeed, I mean, I had the opportunity to look at Weaver of a Life in Colour, and it is indeed very, very beautifully illustrated and also wonderful colours. Those of our listeners who don't have access to the book right now, of course, we encourage everyone to get one for their children as well. Can you tell us a little bit what's happening in the book and what are you exactly teaching children?
Yeah, what I do, the Malcolm the Weaver, Weaver of a Life in Colour, starts off with Black House Boy, the early years, and it gets children thinking about what they're wanting to do with their lives, what the opportunities are. And I tell the story about nature, about Malcolm the Weaver always wanting to be outside, playing on the beach, playing in the trees, playing, appreciating flowers and the birds. A big problem today is, and it was on a news report this morning on the radio, about 4 to 8 year old children spending up to 8 hours a week on the internet and getting too engrossed in mobile phones and internet. And my passion 4 years ago was identifying that, was to try and get children outside, to keep them out in the open, to appreciate nature. So the first part of the book is Malcolm the Weaver hearing the weavers on the Isle of Lewis, hearing the looms and the little the tune that comes from the looms, the shuttle, treadle, weave pick. I wrote a little song that I get children to sing when I do my presentations at school. So the children are focusing on what they want to do and what they want to do with their lives. What dismays me a lot today in society is many people have no idea what they want to do. You talk to 16, 17, 18-year-old people that are at university and they still don't know what they want to do. And I had an idea when I saw what my mother was doing that I would like to get into textiles. So I try in a very gentle way to get children to focus on a potential career in textiles, as I say, be it interiors, be it knitwear, be it apparel, but to get them to focus on it. And when I'm talking to children, I ask them initially, what do you want to be? And they want to be footballers, they want to be pop stars, they want to be roles that their fathers have, which is great. But when I've finished, there's an appreciation of what textiles could be about. And one of the key things I've done is introduced textiles onto the syllabus again into 8 schools where it had been taken off and it's now come back in. So children are doing paper weaving, they're doing knitting, they're doing textile projects that they wouldn't have been doing normally. I've got the support of the Scottish Education, the English Education, the Irish Education authorities, and they're all helping me as I develop this. The book then goes on to talk about Malcolm the Weaver as a weaver and working with his colours and the magic of colour and how colour can be a good thing, it can be a bad thing, it can be a positive thing, it can be a negative thing. So I don't only talk about colour as a feature of a piece of clothing or as a car or whatever, but I talk about the emotion of colour. The book explains to children that red can be stop, it can be a warning sign, it can be love, it can be anger. It then goes on to talk about orange and how orange is a refreshing colour. Orange is one of the most popular colours for advertising, for instance. Then move on to yellow, where yellow is seen as a cowardice colour in Europe and it's seen as a happy colour in Asia. So explain all the emotions of colour as well, and we take them through green and blue and purple and black and white. So in the first book, the children get an appreciation of the hue, the value, the chroma and the meaning of colour. I teach them that a red can be a pink flower, a red can be a fire engine, a red can be a pillar box, a red can be a brick. So they start to realise how red can have different tones and different values. Now these, as I said earlier, are things that children don't normally learn until they're at university or they're at college. I'm getting four-year-olds and straight away they appreciate it. They realise that a light colour or a dark colour can be the same red, but different tones. So that's quite rewarding. And then when I talk about the rainbow that mixed colours in the second book, I talk about if there was pollution, because colour is a reflection of light, a sensation that the brain picks up from the eyes. And if people were green, for instance, and the sky was purple and the sea was yellow, how would life be then? And the children love it because they get into this almost nonsense world of if everything was different, if they were completely different, thinking differently. And then Malcolm the Weaver, shuttle, treadle, weave, pick, he weaves his magic and things start to come back again. Pollution starts to disappear. It's not quite right, but the children go back to Malcolm the Weaver and he weaves again. And all of a sudden, everything becomes back to what it should be. The seas are clear, the rivers are crystal clear, and the colour is back again. On the second story, The Moon That Shone Dark, it's about pollution from cars, pollution from factories. I remember one time when I was in Japan, I looked at the sunset, and can you believe, Elizabeth, the sunset was green?
Really?
The pollution from the factories had created a green aura around the city that I was at. And the sun was setting as a green sunset. Now, that is part of the story. So I've turned that into a little story, which children appreciate. And I tell them that, you know, if you can walk, don't drive in your car so much, that we've got to protect our planet. So it's talking to them about the beauty of life and the protection of our planet. The books, we've got a third book that's going to be published in May this year. And that book is The Tide That Stayed Out. It's what would happen if the tide didn't ebb and flow, and it explains to them the colours on the beach, how colours go brighter when they're wet, they go paler when they're dry, and it explains the magnetism of the moon that makes the tide ebb and flow. And again, not a lot of children, 4 to 8 year olds, know that the tide ebbs and flows twice a day, every day. And the second story on that one is The Wind That Didn't Blow. It's what would happen if there was no wind energy in the world. So it teaches them about, we see the tsunamis that happen, we see about the hurricanes, etc., etc. What would happen and what influence does the wind have on our lives, on how we live? So that's the background to the two books and the four stories that we've written so far. The ideal is to have a series of four books and then take that as a set. So far, we've managed to get the book into 4,000 schools in Britain. There's 22,000 schools altogether. And 4,000 of these schools have the books. We've also run competitions, colouring competitions for children to get them involved in what we're doing. And the books also go on. Die Star have sponsored 100 books in Germany. The Walmart company have sponsored 750 books in Australia. We've now got Huntsman, who have sponsored 200 books in Asia. So we're getting major companies helping us to take the books and to spread the message of colour and textiles, because from these big companies' point of view, the children, the 4 to 8 year olds today, are the students in 10 years' time. They're the young apprentices in 15 years' time, and they're the young managers in 20 years' time. Now, that's not a lot of time when you think on it. You know, if we think back, if your listeners think back to 10 years ago, what they were doing 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and my role in my own small way is to try and get children, not only in UK, but also around the world. We're looking at Russia, we're looking at America, Asia, Australia, to get schools and universities. And I'm working just now. I mean, one of the biggest achievements we've had towards the end of last year was we've got children in Ethiopia. Now, your listeners will know the issues that there are in Ethiopia, the problems that there are in Ethiopia, but the Ethiopian textile industry is one that I'm working with the Ethiopian government through a project called Ethotech, to try and establish a better standard, a better quality of silk, cotton and wool production in Ethiopia. We put the competition over to the primary schools in Addis Ababa, and can you believe we got 50 entries from Ethiopian children, and we'll make sure that awards go to the children in Ethiopia to encourage them to take more of an interest in textiles and colour.
Wow, I see you are full of ideas and full of enthusiasm and also lots of activities all around the world. That's wonderful. And I love how you approach this. And I wondered also, because you said you also go directly into schools and talk to the children and play and sing with them. What is their reaction directly? And also, what do the teachers give you as feedback?
The children, sometimes I'll go to a class where there's 50 children. Sometimes I'll go to a class where they put everybody together and there's 200 or 300. The more there is, the better the interaction. Because the children, unlike adults, the children have no inhibitions. They will sing, they will answer questions, they will ask questions. There's an enthusiasm, which is magical. I mean, it really, really is magical. And that's my concern, Elizabeth, is that the internet, the computer dulls everything down. It flattens your spirit, it flattens your soul. And one of the things I see is this excitement that comes from children. The Society of Dyers and Colourists have a colour experience where they go around schools talking to children about colour. We have design competitions for students around the world. Different regions will enter the Society of Dyers and Colourists design competition. And we also talk to businesses. I mean, I talk to scientists about colour. One of the presentations I do as a fellow of the Society of Dyers and Colourists is talk about the passion of colour and the power of colour. I talk to them about the colours that are from space, you know, from the Hubble spacecraft, the supernovas, the colours that are sent back from the photographs there. The teachers, one of the key things with the teachers is many of them don't know what I'm teaching the 4 to 8 year old children. And that's one of the key things that I've found when I've spoken to adults about my books, is that they didn't know about hue, about value, about chroma. They didn't know that yellow was happy in China, for instance. And the reason that on the Tour de France, they wear the yellow jumper is because it's the most visible colour. And they can see the leader of the Tour de France in his yellow jumper. And I did a little radio presentation with BBC Radio Leeds to explain to the listeners about the colour yellow. I mean, my talk was just about the colour yellow and about songs that have got yellow in it. And I get children singing Yellow Submarine, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round an Old Old Tree. All the influence that colour has had on life has been fantastic. Now, one of the sad things that's happened in society today, if you look at the streets, if your listeners have a look at the cars that they pass when they're on the motorway, they're all black, they're all silver, they're all grey, they're all neutral. It's such a sad state of affairs that colour has died a little bit. And I've got a poster in my kitchen that my daughter Zoe, who's now 10, drew, and it says, "No colour, no fun." Mm-hmm. If you look back at old pictures from the 60s and 70s, cars were all a whole rainbow of colours. Red cars, blue cars, green cars. It was incredible. The same with clothes. You know, people talk about fashion and navy is a new black or brown is a new black. There's a dullness, there's a somberness, there's a safeness about what everybody does now. And I believe that that has dulled the human race and it's not as much fun as it used to be. And I like to think that with the things we do through the Society of Dyers and Colourists and through this education programme, is that we start to get children thinking more about colour. And one of the things that we're working on just now for Christmas 2017 is a theatrical production to try and take the Malcolm the Weaver story, Weaver of a Life in Colour, into a little theatre like Jack and the Beanstalk or Puss in Boots or whatever, so that children can start to interact with colour and there can be a colour experience that becomes part of a stage show that can maybe start off in Yorkshire but eventually travel around the world as a book travels. It's a very, you've gathered, Elizabeth, it's a very ambitious project. But if you don't have your dream, then there is not a lot of purpose. My own view is that you've got to have targets that are way, way higher than you believe you can achieve to get there. And I think if I can get the support from industry, if people would sponsor 10 books, 50 books, 100 books into schools in their regions, then they know that their children within their vicinity are going to have an appreciation about colour and textiles. For instance, W.T. Johnson's over in Huddersfield sponsored 200 books into every school in Kirklees. Now, they're hoping that the children that read these books will eventually become apprentices in their business. Kamira Fabrics sponsored 100 books, and they gave books to the children of their workforce so that their workforce's children appreciated the colour that their parents are working on. So there's so many facets that can work. I mean, one of the things I'm doing with BBC Scotland just now is I'm putting together a pitch for an animation series that could maybe run on CBeebies. And they've asked me to do a pitch for 45 different shows. Now, it will start off with colour and textiles, but it could go into colour and food, colour and ceramics, colour and interiors, colour and nature. There's so many opportunities. And as I said earlier, I believe that the 4 to 8 year olds or even 4 to 11 year olds, if we can catch their interest now, it takes them away from some of the other things that may distract them and take them into a more mundane and a more humdrum career for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a very good vision, and I wish you much success with all those projects that are lying ahead of you. But I want to go back a little bit also to, you mentioned earlier also students at universities. What is the current situation in regards to courses on textiles? And do you see, I'm assuming you see a lot of demand for some action in regards to education. So I would like to hear your take on that.
Yeah. One of my concerns is I did my course at the City and Guilds of London Institute, where I was taught the fundamentals about wool, about yarn, about weaving, about setting a cloth, about dyeing a cloth. So technically, I know what there is to know about making a piece of cloth. I can look at someone's clothes and I can tell what the yarn is, what the wool is, where it came from, how it was dyed, how it was constructed, what the weave is. Today, that doesn't happen. I mean, one of my big concerns, I was on a board at Huddersfield University, and they changed the name of the course from the design and textile design and technical to textile to art and design, because it would get more students as art and design rather than design and technical. Now, it served its purpose, and there is many, many more students. But the commercial aspect of education today, I believe, is taken away from the technical aspect of what students need to be learning. Because it's more difficult and because it's very complicated, the textile design students today are encouraged to draw silhouettes of the garments that may be made from their fabric. Now, to me, that is wrong, because the two disciplines are completely different. You have a fashion designer who does the garments and the apparel and the styling of the garment, and you have a textile designer who creates a beautiful cloth. If you try and combine the two, each one is going to become less good than it could be, because the technical textile student is not the artist. The artist is not the technical student. And I've found when I talk to students, I mean, I'm having to explain to them very fundamental differences. People think, for instance, that wool comes from the sheep that they see in their location. You know, for instance, in UK, people see sheep in the field and they think that a beautiful Armani or Hermes Zegna suit is made from the wool from that sheep. They don't realise that all the apparel around the world comes from sheep from Australia or New Zealand. And because the fashion trends have changed, and price deflation has been such a problem. I mean, the big retailers like Marks and Spencer's and Next pride themselves in offering quality products at cheap prices. Back in the 1990s, when I was working for Parkland, I would sell £15 million worth of cloth to Marks and Spencer's. We were the biggest supplier for ladies' wear and men's wear. Today, you can hardly find any pure new wool for ladies' wear. It's all gone to viscose, it's gone to polyester. There's been a price deflation, which has created a lower quality product and an inferior product, in my view, to allow people to spend less money on their apparel. The universities are teaching very fundamental. I work with Baird menswear brands in Leeds, one of the biggest suppliers of clothes to the likes of Debenhams, House of Fraser, these people. And the buyers have to explain the difference between wool and worsted, between twill and Panama, between the different weaves. So my concern with education is that that has been dumbed down as well. And that when people like myself and people who have the technical knowledge of cloth, when they've gone, then everything becomes simpler and nobody cares anymore about the quality, about the aspects. One of the things I studied, Elizabeth, was the introduction of wool to Australia, because if wool hadn't gone to Australia in 1792, when John McCarthy took 10 sheep to Australia, the whole industry, the whole textile industry wouldn't have occurred. Eliza Furlong from Scotland then took some Saxony sheep in 1820 to Australia, and that's what began the whole industry. Every country around the world, every developing country, its fortunes have been created from wool and textiles. And even now, as I do my work in Ethiopia, textiles are going to be the biggest revenue generator from export and from an internal point of view. But then once it's established, everything then moves on to IT and to other industries, and wool becomes second best. So it's used very much as an introduction, and then it's taken away. I mean, I remember in my career, Yorkshire and Scotland were the key areas for textiles back in the 70s. Italy and Europe were very, very important. Then along came China and along came India, who invested in textiles and developed their industries. But today, China's got serious problems with the aging population. India's got problems with its lack of infrastructure. So what's happened? Retailers are now going to Cambodia. They're going to Vietnam. They're going even to North Korea to get their textiles at cheaper prices. And people are now investing in Ethiopia. China have invested in Ethiopia. Turkey have invested in Ethiopia. But because the infrastructure there and the corruption is so vast, these are not quite working. But in time, they will work. What I'm trying to encourage with the work that I do and the work that the Society of Dyers and Colourists and the Textile Institute does is to try and stabilise that, to keep an industry. Harris Tweed, for instance, is now a very successful industry up in Scotland. It was taken down the price deflation line for many, many years before myself and a few of the mills and the Harris Tweed Authority started to re-establish the value, the provenance, the heritage and the beauty of Harris Tweed as a product. All the things that I try and develop are to enhance a cloth. You know, I've been involved in the introduction of Lycra to cloth, of showerproofing to cloth, of machine washability to lambswool. All these things have happened. And I believe today, one of the things that happened about 10, 15 years ago is yarn started to be spun too fine. Cloth started to be woven too light, you know, about 6, 7, 8 ounces a metre. Now, these cloths can't be constructed properly. The tailors find it very difficult to make a lightweight cloth into a suit because you get puckering, you get the fusibles, all the interlinings shown through. So there is a standard that needs to be re-established within textiles and a market that needs to be reintroduced. And I believe that market is the younger market. You know, you get shows on television like, you know, some of the American shows where young guys are starting to wear suits again, wearing waistcoats, smartening up, and not the dress down Friday, but the smart up Friday. People are starting to look smarter as they go out. I say to a lot of my younger friends, young men should be like peacocks. They should be proud as they were in the 50s, 60s, 70s. They should be proud of how they look, not looking as scruffy as they can in trainers and jeans and T-shirts, but try and smarten the whole thing up. If that was to happen globally, the textile industry would have the phoenix would rise again and would have a better textile industry.
Well, thank you for sharing your opinion on that. And yeah, this is, I guess, also part of why I have this podcast, is also to spread more knowledge about wool and the textile industry. Mm-hmm. So I'm full of support that we need to bring more education outside our own industry, because we need to get young people into the industry to develop also these innovations that we need to continue with our lovely wool. I would like to wrap up, but before I do, please tell us, how can businesses support your work with the book? How can they get involved?
Okay. My ideal is that businesses that are involved in textiles, businesses that are involved in colour, businesses that are involved in the environment or that have an appreciation of health and well-being, should do two things. One is have a look at our website. It's www.malcolmtheweaver.com. And you'll see the work that we do. You'll see the education we give to children. You'll see the competitions that we run. You'll get an insight into the two books. They could also look at the Society of Dyers and Colourists website, wwsdc.org. They could have a look at the YouTube CBeebies programme. And they can also contact me on malcolm@theclothofkings.com. So there's various ways that they can make contact with us. The key thing is for them to then think to themselves, what could they do? How many children could they be influenced by the contribution that they would make? Now, the biggest sponsorship we've had has been 750 books from the Woolmark Company. British Wool Marketing Board sponsored 500 books. The Harris Tweed Authority put 100 books into one of each book into 50 schools in the Outer Hebrides. Companies should think, what benefit would they have? Now, the social benefit is good because we tell the schools that that specific company has helped us and is helping the children and is looking not only to teach them about textiles and colour, but also to sow the seeds for potential employment for them in 10 to 15 years' time when they're looking for work. So if a company was interested, if they could contact either the Malcolm the Weaver website, contact the Society of Dyers and Colourists, contact me on malcolm@theclothofkings.com, and we will send them a flyer, we will send them all the details, we'll send them some of the press releases that we've had. We've had the Times Educational Supplement doing a fantastic article where what we did, we took 4 to 8 year old children to Glasgow College and we introduced them to the students that were doing the design degrees. The children were taught by the students to weave. So we're linking the bridge between children, students and industry. Industry needs to do more than it's doing just now to encourage people to come into the industry. I work very closely with the Textile Centre of Excellence in Huddersfield, and they've put Malcolm the Weaver onto their website. They allowed me to have a stand at the recent awards ceremony. Now, at the recent awards ceremony, there was 40 apprentices got awards. 15 years ago, there'd have been 200 apprentices getting awards. If the industry doesn't do something to encourage young people to come into it, the industry is going to fizzle and it's all going to go to developing countries. We're going to lose our textile industry in Britain, in Europe, in America. So I'm looking for companies. I mean, yesterday I sent notes out to Saks Fifth Avenue, to Paul Stewart, to Ralph Lauren, introducing them to the project. Can you believe that Saks Fifth Avenue have come back saying that they are considering sponsorship in America? And another interesting story, Elizabeth, just as we conclude, is that Donald Trump, the president-elect in America, can you believe that his mother, Mary McLeod, came from the Isle of Lewis? His grandfather was called Malcolm McLeod, and he was a crofter and a weaver on the Isle of Lewis. How ironic is that, that the future president of the United States, like him or like him not, his grandfather was Malcolm the Weaver. So that was a little twist that came about unexpectedly. And you know what? That, again, is the magic of life and the magic of Malcolm the Weaver.
Wow, I love those last words. Thank you so much. That's a really nice story to end with. And of course, we'll also link to all of the websites that you mentioned in the show notes. And we also have some pictures of the book and how you present the book to children in the classroom. So anyone interested can also check out the show notes to make sure you get all the information about Malcolm the Weaver and the project. Thank you, Malcolm, so much for your time. It was wonderful to listen to what you have to say about color and textiles. That was really inspiring. And I hope you continue to inspire lots of children all around the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. If you want to find out more about Malcolm Campbell and his beautiful project of the Malcolm the Weaver book, then please visit the show notes where you can find all the information Malcolm mentioned during the episode. Don't want to miss out on any of the future episodes? Then subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and also like us on Facebook @Elizabeth Van Delden. Thank you and see you next week.